This time last week, we were once again recovering from radical Islamic terrorist attacks in American soil with bombings in New York City and New Jersey, along with stabbings in Minnesota. What we've learned over the past week is that we have a national security operation that fails, immigration system that's too weak, and too many elected leaders who fear what they'll be called if they dare to speak the truth. With us now to share his analysis of these recent events with a special focus on the New York City, New Jersey bombing is a national security analyst with the Clarion Project, a professor of counterterrorism at Liberty University, and associate producer of the documentary Faith Keepers, Professor Ryan Murrow. Thanks for being here today, Ryan.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
And two websites, clarionproject.org and ryanmurrow.com. Is it safe to say that the New Jersey, New York bomber Ahmed Rahmani was not exactly a stealth terrorist? He seemed to be pretty public with his leanings, especially after his return from Afghanistan.
Oh, yeah, he's definitely a terrorist, but even going beyond that, you can say he's an Islamist. He was a Muslim that took a interpretation of his faith as essentially a constitution rather than just about a relationship with God.
Look, you know, hindsight being some sort of value, although to the people who are injured, not much. But when you look at the fact that his own father raised a red flag about Ahmad Rahmani, and it was, quote unquote, investigated and nothing to see here, and it was move on to the next thing as far as the feds were concerned. What's that tell us about how intense and how insightful our national security system is?
Well, it's really about big government and a lack of intelligence sharing, which is going to correspond with big government, because you have so much information being scooped up that has to be shared among so many people that it becomes really inefficient and difficult in order to do anything about it. And then fixing it results in more disruption. If you start combining agencies, then that weakens you during the period of time that you do that. And so it really puts us between a rock and a hard place. But I would not say that the counterterrorism personnel are slacking or incompetent. It's just that they're dealing with trying to find a needle in the haystack, an overwhelming amount of information, a tremendous bureaucracy, and tons of restriction in addition to political correctness. So what looked to me is what happened was that we had all of these different pieces of intelligence information spread across the system and just weren't brought together on a single desk. If they were, then this guy would have been on a terrorist watch list.
Seems like some people haven't learned at this point, too, when someone perpetrates what Rahmani perpetrated, instead of looking for cell phone records, unlocking cell phones like San Bernardino or study writings or social media, isn't it maybe a quick express way to find out reality by just finding out more about the mosque that someone like this attended?
Well, that's one way of doing it. Right now, they're not allowed to do that. They basically, what we're discussing is the fact that there are Islamist movements, which is separate from Islamic. I mean, they are Islamic, but then Islamist refers to those that follow political Islam, a radical interpretation of their faith that says that our system should be an Islamic state. And if you were to follow all of those movements, violent or nonviolent, illegal or legal, that's where you would find the radicalization taking place. Because before you violently try to implement an Islamic state, you first have to believe you should implement an Islamic state. So it's a very simple concept, and that's why it's so important to highlight things like the fact that the New Jersey mosque that the bomber was attending is led by a guy who's an official of a group called the Islamic Circle of North America, ICNA, which has a very radical teaching guide that I've obtained. It's a group that is a derivative of a radical Pakistani organization, and this group opposes ISIS. They condemn al-Qaeda. They're not violent here in the United States. But nonetheless, if you look at what they're teaching, it's an interpretation of Islam that's very similar to this worldview that leads to attacks like this. The teaching guide says to operate in secret, to wage jihad, has all sorts of anti-American perspectives, and basically calls for implementing Sharia gradually, whereas ISIS calls for attacking everyone everywhere. This group's a little bit more restrained in how they go about it, but the goal is the same.
There's some Google searching and some studying about the Imam Harani from that mosque. He seems to be almost like a Yasser Arafat type of guy. When he's talking to people of his own faith and his own sect, it's the Sharia law and the overtaking and the infiltration. But then if he has the opportunity to talk to the American people and certainly people locally around the area of Damascus, he'll take place and take part in workshops and seminars. He's out there as warm and fuzzy peace-seeking imam.
Right. Well, in fairness, we don't have any quotes from the imam himself saying something extreme. In fact, he has said multiple things that I found quite impressive and rare from Muslim American leadership that I would reference even. You know, I would say it's a positive thing. But that comes from publicly available sermons. That's the type of stuff that he posts online. What's going on behind the scenes, if there's a broader worldview that clashes, it doesn't even have to necessarily contradict. It's just a broader worldview that includes extreme thinking. We don't know because you wouldn't post that online if you're slick about it. But the question is, let's suppose that he's genuine and the positive things he said is a comprehensive worldview that he has. He's still an official with a radical group, and he's a teacher for that radical group. And the teaching guide, which is what naturally a teacher would reference in that group, is very radical. So how do you reconcile all of that? He can be out there saying a lot of positive things, but if he's an official, a teacher for a radical group that has these very radical things, then he has to answer for that. How can he reconcile what he's saying with the group that he works for?
And with Professor Ryan Morrow, National Security Analyst with the Clarion Project. He's a professor of counterterrorism at Liberty University. Also the associate producer of the documentary Faith Keepers, clarionproject.org and ryanmorrow.com. And you're listening to Issues and Ideas. We always look at someone who perpetrates as a teaching moment, I guess you could say. When you look at Ahmad Rahmani and the path he took to his radicalization, does he reinforce the areas that we need to be paying more attention to? And does it just prove that the path to radicalization is indeed a concrete path that doesn't have too many variables to it?
Well, there are a lot of variables in terms of that process where someone tries to find their identity. So when they're, usually it happens when they're a teenager, but it can happen younger, it can happen older. And they start trying to figure out, you know, where do I stand on how the world works? Where do I stand on how I relate to my faith and how that intersects with politics? And sometimes what you'll see are people that want to avoid the ideological element, which is the key element, will point to, oh, well, he had family problems. Oh, he didn't have many friends. He was picked on. He was a Muslim, so he felt alienated. Maybe his family didn't have as much money as they should have and were struggling a bit. They find all these things that all of us face at some point, and they point to that as the factor and saying, well, that's what led to the identity crisis. That's what led to him trying to figure out his worldview. Well, I got news for you. Everyone goes through that. You cannot fix that. Being a teenager, being a youth is difficult. It's terrible for most people. And you can't point to that as a variable because not everyone becomes an Islamist extremist. Most people don't as a result. They do other bad things in high school. They don't do that. And so you have to look at the strongest variable that you can influence that's objectionable in order to impact them all. And what is that? It's the ideology. It's when they start turning their faith into something political, into a constitution, and then they become obsessed with it and increasingly obsessed with it to the point where they become jihadists.
Assess for us how this attack was treated by people who we hope would be our leaders, those who are currently our elected leaders, and the media, because it just seems like there's, across the board in way too many instances, a reluctance to point out the enemy and the terrorist act. It's always this wait and see, and in a battle like this where we're told to play by the rules against an enemy who doesn't want to recognize rules, a wait and see puts us on the losing side quickly.
Sure. A good example of everything that we're talking about is the testimony of Philip Haney, who was working for the Homeland Security. He was originally with Customs and Border Enforcement, and he was a founding member of the Department of Homeland Security, meaning that he was one of the original members of Homeland Security, and he was a top guy. He got a lot of awards, and he did a lot of really good things. And basically, he was running a database. And he would do just what I'm recommending. He would find the Islamist extremist groups, put them into a database, and then use that to help decide who can come into the country or not. And he was very successful at it. But then during the later years of the Bush years, and then certainly under the Obama administration, other officials from the bureaucracy, State Department, and Homeland Security intervened and said, you can't do that. This is a civil liberties violation. to have a database of people that are affiliated with Islamist extremist groups. You can only have a database that includes people that are part of illegal terrorist groups. And his point was, you find the illegal terrorist suspects by looking at the legal terror-affiliated organizations. And that's a story that is not just limited to him. I've talked to a lot of different law enforcement sources who have all told me similar stories of that similar line of thinking and how databases were deleted, training was altered, and there are all sorts of repercussions ever since around, let's say, 2010, 2011.
We always hope for a wake-up call to come about from after one event to the next, and we have to hope once again that that wake-up call is here and now through the events that we saw about a week ago or so. We've been joined this morning by the National Security Analyst with the Clarion Project. He's also Professor of Counterterrorism at Liberty University and Associate Producer of the documentary Faith Keepers, ClarionProject.org, RyanMorrow.com. Professor Ryan Morrow, thanks so much for your insight and for being here today.
Sure. Thank you so much for having me.